Hey everyone at ASAP Now, and thanks again for joining us here at ASAP Nowcast, the podcast for ASAP Now. For those of you just joining us, I'm Amy Ho, ER doctor, assistant editor at ASAP Now, and your friendly podcast host. So October is a really busy month. ASAP Scientific Assembly has just wrapped, and probably many of you are still recovering from Vegas. And with so much going on, I wanted to bring some podcast-only content that was actually rooted in one of the magazine articles, which is Artificial Intelligence for Medical Billing. Now, a couple reasons I wanted to do this. One, artificial intelligence and machine learning and large language models and all those buzzwords are becoming increasingly prevalent in healthcare, and we're really starting to see a lot of those products come out and people starting to adapt them. I think secondarily is my field is actually informatics, which is a subset of medicine that looks at like data analytics, EHR builds, and yes, health technology. So I wanted to give my spin on this article. So like I mentioned, the article that we're featuring today in ASAP Nowcast is one that's in the magazine on ASAP Now, and it's called Artificial Intelligence for Medical Billing. Now it starts with a discussion with Dr. Mori and Dr. Jones out of Mayo, where they had a research publication that featured their work where they looked at 300,000 adult ED encounters, and they worked to establish a model using natural language processing and machine learning to predict billing codes. And then they correlated that to see whether or not it was fairly accurate. And it was really for all billing codes from level 2 through 5. Now, this is really quite interesting to me because as we all know, with the CMS changes on medical decision-making, in the billing rules, there's a lot of free text understanding. It is no longer how many review systems or exam or history elements, which are just different click buttons that you need to count. It's a lot more of what is the risk? What are the tests that you considered? What are the comprehensive differential diagnoses of a case that you encounter? And so by proving that they had some accuracy in looking at these patients and these encounters for billing, they proved that really AI can save time and money when it comes to revenue cycle. So I found this article interesting, not only because of the actual study and the work of Dr. Mori and Jones, but because of the greater discussion of what is AI in healthcare. And that's really what I wanted to focus on today, because I agree wholeheartedly with their conclusion that AI can save time and money. So I think if we open with what is AI, I think that will give us a really good basis as we layer into what does it mean for healthcare, where is it being applied, what does it mean for emergency medicine, and what does it mean for us as ER doctors on shift or doing other, you know, administrative work or you know, ancillary work related to being an ER doctor. So AI is artificial intelligence. It is often discussed in conjunction with machine learning. And what artificial intelligence and machine learning are taking massive, massive, massive data sets. And I mean millions and billions of data sets, feeding it into a quote engine, and then coming up with something out of that. Usually that something out of that is targeted toward a particular goal. In the instance of Dr. Mori and Jones, obviously targeted towards the goal of assigning billing codes, but can be applied in a lot of other places. So when we talk about artificial intelligence and machine learning, a lot of people think about ChatGPT because it was probably the biggest and first artificial intelligence engine to be something released to the lay population that you could play with. And that is, of course, ChatGPT, where you can talk with their engine, ask it questions, use it in, you know, different role play negotiations, et cetera. There's tons of videos and discussions about how to use ChatGPT. And what they did is what we are now seeing, not so much that what OpenAI did, is looked at how this layers into healthcare. So in understanding artificial intelligence, machine learning, not only do you have to understand that you're starting with billions or millions of training data sets to understand and gain knowledge out of it, you also need to understand what is LLM, which is large language models. And how I think about LLM is the world of healthcare is actually largely driven by free text. It is like consultant notes. It is your medical decision making, which, you know, a lot of times we just dictate rather than clicking buttons. And what's really difficult about that is when you have this free text, text that you're trying to process. It's not click buttons that can be filed to a database that looks functionally like a bunch of Excel spreadsheets. You are actually parsing language, which is difficult. We use things like acronyms. We don't use perfect grammar. There may be some slang that is regional or specific to a particular specialty, cough, cough, ophthalmology, being one of those notes I find very difficult to digest because of their vernacular. And these large language models have to first parse language and then use that parsing to structure it into actual meaning. And what I mean by that is they're not only parsing out what is a noun, adjective, verb, they have to know that given the string of those and the ordering of those, this parsed language means X. And then after that, there's a whole network of understanding. Now that you know it means X, what do you do with it? So one of the things to highlight here is in artificial intelligence, machine learning, these are super broad categories. LLM is one subset of that, which to me is the parsing of the language. The quote intelligence on what to do with that parsed language can be intelligence in machine learning with more training sets, but it also can just be logical rules. Like in the example of billing, those rules are highly well established. So in this instance, you would start with a large language model to parse free text notes, turn that into the pieces that can check off the different parts of very well established rules, which is the CMS billing rules, and then assign, of course, the code. So two things to highlight. One is that in all artificial intelligence and also machine learning models, you need training sets. So your engine is only going to be as good as your training sets are. And that means that you should feed it millions of data points of, let's say, charts, and know what the assigned code should be and then compare and see how it is and feed back to the engine so that it can learn and understand and also be tweaked and sometimes externally configured so that you can actually get intelligence and hone it to something that is usable. I think the second part of where AI machine learning really, really, really differentiates from these, you know, prior computer-assisted, coding models is that there's this concept of intelligence and learning. And what that means is not only do you start with this static training set to program, but then you expect that as you continue on using the engine, that the data you give it is actually used to improve it, which means that it is, quote, learning, and that is the intelligence part of it, versus prior models have all just started with maybe training sets, the logical rules of this is what you need to make a level 5 or 4 or 3, but then it's not dynamic. And so that dynamic piece is really unique to the AI and machine learning conversation that we have today. So if we start with that basis of hopefully understanding what is AI and how it differentiates from prior just computer models and logical rules and quote automations that we see in healthcare, I think we can discuss where is it being applied. So in the instance of this article, we really focused a lot on that research paper by Dr. Morian Jones out of Mayo about RevCycle and billing and coding. I think that there is a lot in healthcare that extends well beyond billing and into things like chart generation. There are tons of AI scribing models now, both integrated into EHRs and external, where you literally will have a application or even just a web portal or website on your phone and then listen to the conversation of you taking HPI with the patient like a physical scribe would. And then it takes all of that conversation and parses it into your nice soap note or your, you know, history, physical, exam, MDM elements, differential, etc. So there's many products like that. And again, that starts really with the large language model and then layers into what I think are more logical rules about what you need in a chart, i.e. you need a history, you need an exam, you need review systems, so on. There are also many applications of AI, in particular with EHRs, with messaging patients. I know very prominently, there is an Epic and OpenAI partnership where they are really focusing on actually how do you improve the in-basket and messaging with patients process, which is really more of an outpatient clinic thing. But can you actually read the messages coming in from patients, do a chart dive, do a chart review, and then actually draft the message back and be sent? And in really early looks at what Epic and OpenAI are doing in the in-basket feature, they're actually finding that patients sometimes find the OpenAI generated message a lot more pleasant than the doctor's one. Maybe because, you know, an engine is not constrained by time the way that a physician might be, and also doesn't have emotions the way people do, but that it was actually very positive. So this is one of those models from, again, two giants in both healthcare and in AI that's becoming a really interesting proof of concept that will only continue to grow and grow quickly. And I think lastly, analytics is worth mentioning. Analytics in healthcare is not really that novel. We've been doing it a lot of times. Like, there have been measures from, you know, the start time for patient per hour to RVU per hour to dollars per hour, you know, what is your chest pain emission rate, all these sort of things. Where I think AI brings a lot of novelty to analytics is, one, the size of data models. 10,000 rows will easily break an Excel sheet. Millions of rows can break a small database and require additional servers. And in the instance of how what AI is doing, they are actually processing billions and billions and billions of complex rows into something that is meaningful. And I think that's interesting because you're not only speaking to the AI engine, but you're also speaking to the server infrastructure that has support that can process billions and billions and billions of rows and do something meaningful with it. I think the other part of analytics is, not only are you looking at very large models, which then allow you to do things that are not only retrospective, but also predictive, but you are also layering that with the ability to understand free text. So previously in data analytics, we're mostly looking at fields. Like, we're looking at boxes that people input or check things on, given a selection of items. Like, you know, what are the dispositions? There's only about six of them. Now you're actually using large language models to parse out what is language and then layer that into analytics. So you're extracting so much more out of a chart than just the click buttons of what we did. And again, super interesting on how nuanced you can get. So given that there are these major buckets, and again, I'm just covering the ones that I think are really relevant to emergency medicine, there's plenty more. I think there's a couple of considerations. But when we talk about AI, I think we need to recognize that AI did not come out of healthcare. It came out of tech. And that field is a billion dollar industry that is rapidly and expanding and growing. And what that means is things are highly adaptable in the tech world, because even every few months, OpenAI is releasing a new GPT model that is actually more improved, more smart, and faster and more accessible to people. And what that means, ironically, for healthcare, in my opinion, is that it's hard for healthcare to integrate that, because healthcare is not perhaps the fastest in technology changes. We are literally using pagers and faxes still. But given how rapidly expanding and growing the AI industry is, by the time that we have implemented something in healthcare, the actual AI model underlying might already be changed. And while I don't think that's a bad thing, I think it's something to consider, because it's really easy for us to say, oh, great, I want to implement, you know, AI scribing at my shop. However, I think it makes the consideration of change management really important. And again, I'm biased. This is my world. I work in health tech and also informatics. But no longer can we say, you know, there's a new version of Epic, and in a year and a half, we'll have a new version and train everyone on it. The speed of which AI is growing means that you are actually implementing new versions probably every couple months. Otherwise, it's no longer relevant. And there's resources associated with that. There's also education associated with that. And most importantly, there's QA associated with that. Imagine you started a model with, let's say, an AI scribe or a AI rev cycle coding company. You did a validation and QA for a couple months and you feel happy with it. Well, guess what? You're already on a new version, probably 3, 4, 5, 6 months later. And now you have to do another QA validation round. And that can be really time and resource intensive, so something to consider. Now, I think one of the other considerations is, it's really sexy to think that, you know, we can come up with something like an AI platform out of healthcare. But the truth is, I think that it's a technology industry that healthcare is going to benefit from, but maybe not be the one that innovates and creates. Like, we'll probably build on it. And so I think that's what, when we really need to think about, how do these products and features plug into existing models? For example, there is OpenAI, there's Copilot, there's Gemini, there's Claude, there's all these AI models that are available to the lay public. but they don't layer into what I call our tech stack, right? They don't plug in to our EHRs. Some of our EHRs are, look like they're coded in MS-DOS. So it's not surprising that these kind of new models don't plug into them. But it is a consideration of what do you do when you're already tied to a system, usually an EHR one with, let's say, a lab system and a radiology system and, you know, maybe a paging system. Like, you have a tech stack in healthcare. How do you layer these really new, novel, innovative, quickly changing products into them? I mean, it's a difficult conversation and a difficult thing to piece together. So I think two things to keep in mind, and I say this in particular to not discourage, but to give a little bit of background to hopefully allow you to have intelligent conversations at your local facilities if you're trying to implement AI. Now, I have a last few thoughts when talking to ER doctors about AI, and I think the thoughts that I have are mostly to encourage physicians to look at the products out there and choose what they want to potentially try out. And my next few thoughts are really about how do you get to the tryout part and how do you get to the, the downsides that you really need to consider before you decide to try out. So I already mentioned EHR integration, that a lot of these products do not plug in. Many EHRs already do have native plug-in capabilities, like Dragon is using ambient scribing already. Epic, as I mentioned, is doing in-basket with OpenAI, as well as analytics, as well as chart review. Cerner has a big collaboration as well, looking, I think, mostly at predictive analytics. And there's many more with hospital systems and some of the other major EHRs. I think, though, because EHR instances are controlled locally at the hospital, usually, or perhaps at the hospital system level, before you are able to use these products, you really need to ask the question of, can it integrate with the EHR and is it allowed to? Because chances are there is an informatics group or a CTO or a CIO or something like that that is very well versed in this conversation and some of the concerns that could go with it. I think some of the other things to consider are those concerns that CIOs and CTOs have when discussing AI. Number one to me is really auditing and compliance. As I discussed, AI engines are really unique in that they actually learn and develop and are dynamic. And so how do you actually audit that? How often do you audit that? What is the compliance to that? Imagine that you implemented a coding engine and at the end of the day, you QA'd it, you thought it was great. A year later, you found out, just kidding, it is actually massively upcoding and now you've defrauded Medicare. This is a problem. And so when you get into the auditing and compliance, how do you explain what happened? Because there's a lot of more or less black box algorithms with AI models. Not only do you start with a little bit of a black box algorithm and you have some configuration, but as it learns and develops, it actually modifies itself. And this is the fear that, you know, a year from now, maybe even a few months from now, what you thought you were implementing is no longer what you're still implementing. And in healthcare, I think we have to have really tight auditing compliance checks because of things like CMS, and of course, because the impact is really, really high when we're talking about patients, maybe less for billing, but certainly for patient care. I think the next piece goes along with that, but it's also QA and risk. So imagine that you have an AI engine that you're using for triage, which people have. So a patient shows up, they input, you know, basic history elements, and then an AI engine actually assigns their ESI. So what do you do if you have bad outcomes? What do you do if it misassigns someone as a lower severity ESI when they really should have come back to the back and then they code in the waiting room? So obviously, no one wants that to happen, but it opens up really interesting questions, and maybe I shouldn't say interesting, but concerning questions of, if you have a bad outcome from the implementation of an AI engine, who is at fault? Who was overseeing it? How do you know that they were overseeing it? And then do they understand even what they are overseeing? In a lot of ways, it is analogous to me of the whole Tesla self-driving car discussion of, if you get in an accident while your Tesla is self-driving, who is at fault? Like, ultimately you are definitely at fault. But in the instance of some of these AI platforms, you know, let's say you are using AI triage, like, who's at fault? The nurse that did vitals and input them? Like, that doesn't feel right. Is it the physician in the back? Like, that doesn't feel right. And it also doesn't really quite feel right that maybe it's a health system that decided to implement or the company of the product that built the engine. We don't have answers yet on these questions, which is why I think the risk one is one that we certainly should not shoulder and needs to be discussed at a higher level. And I think that goes along with the QA discussion, that we need to make sure that the result of an AI engine is actually still producing the result we think it is. And when you're talking about billions or millions, millions of billions or trillions of data elements that an AI engine could be looking at. I mean, it's really not enough to have someone say QA 30 charts or, you know, 30 triages or what have you, you know, every couple of days. Like, the volume is just too high for a human to keep up with. So then how do you establish meaningful quality assurance to make sure that you are not creating undue risk? Now, the last piece that I think is really worth mentioning on concerns with AI integration is privacy and data ownership. Obviously, we are complicated in healthcare because of PHI and HIPAA. When we talked about AI and how it's programmed, I mentioned that there is a training set. And then actually, as an AI engine is used, ideally, it uses the knowledge that it gains from what is queried on it to actually continue to grow and develop. Now, when that knowledge is PHI, it gets really sticky because a patient may have a PHI agreement with the health facility, with the provider, like all the BAs and things that need to associate for that. But what if that data is actually being used in the training model of an AI product? Is it identifiable? Like, maybe let's just pretend today it's not identifiable. However, as AI engines continue to grow and develop, there is nothing saying that, let's say, 5 years from now, that same AI engine could actually develop the sophistication to realize that the, you know, 50-year-old patient with heart failure that I asked, you know, the AI engine a question about, you know, how to treat. There's not a way to know that 5 years from now, it doesn't have the sophistication to say, yes, that is Jane Doe living at this site in this city, and identify it. And this is concerning because, as I mentioned before, the whole AI machine learning and LLM world is just growing so quickly that we don't know what are the risks that could be exposed later. But yet we need to data share to continue to grow engines. So it brings up this whole question of privacy. The other side of that is data ownership. So if we are sending patient data or even just proprietary data about health system, like pretend it's some kind of clinical protocol about how you, I don't know, deal with chest pains or even what are your like CDU protocols? Who owns that data? So hypothetically, right, the health system or, you know, whoever owns the data initially. When it goes to another product or another layer, like an AI engine, there needs to be a really, really tight term of use, licensing agreement, et cetera, to say who owns that data and what can it then be used for. So this requires a legal team, certainly, to rubber stamp and also establish BAs. So I mentioned this again because I would cringe if I knew that, well, I do know that this happens, that ER doctors see a product, think it's really cool, and then just start using it on their personal devices. I've seen this happen with AI scribes, and then don't ask their health system. Like, you absolutely need to get these rubber stamps because of these concerns. So my last thoughts are, I've given a lot of concerns. I actually think AI is extraordinary and amazing, and it's something everyone should at least try to play with. So how do you get started? So number one, ask your health system, express that you're interested, express that your department is interested, point out some of the pain points and point out some of the products or types of products that could help with that, i.e. AI scribing, AI assisted coding, etc. But let someone or a team of someone's check through all of those integration questions, compliance questions, risk questions, privacy questions, because that is not something that we can individually do. I think number two is try it out in your normal life. Like, ChatGPT is open to everyone. Their better models are available for like $20 a month. And you can do amazing things with ChatGPT. Like, I have done everything from ask it recipes to ideas for travel, to, you know, if I had a difficult conversation come up, I would have it role play with me and I'd say, hey, pretend you're so-and-so and this is the situation. For every line I give you, please do this. I have used it to explain medical concepts to my family, and then I would have it translate it into Mandarin for them. Like, it's really incredible to play with, and it will give you a really big understanding of what AI can be for you, not only in your work life, but also in your normal life. I will emphasize, do not send it PHI. I have certainly described differentials to it and asked it to walk me through treatment management and likeliness. And I have found it absolutely spot on and a great thing to try, because you have a really good gut test for what is accurate in healthcare and what isn't. But, you know, I asked it to talk me through, you know, kind of the rare diseases on differentials sometimes where I just kind of forgot what was the full management, where I'd say like, hey, I admitted a patient that had, you know, these lab results. Tell me what would be the likely outcome and management for the inpatient team. And I feel like that gives me a lot of color sometimes. So I'll ask it these, you know, more broad healthcare concepts or medical concepts. But I think that it is something worth it to try out. And you can do it without sending any PHI. And I think lastly of how to get started is just be aware of EHR changes coming. Like I mentioned, Epic and OpenAI have a huge partnership. Dragon already has ambient scribing. Be on the lookout for things coming out in your system and, you know, volunteer to beta test it. They usually want people that are really engaged to give feedback. And so I think this is a great way of getting your feet wet and seeing how you can absolutely just explode your productivity if you know how to use it. So that is my hopefully comprehensive thoughts about AI. I want to give special thanks to Dr. Morin and Dr. Jones for speaking with our ASAP staff to get this article together. And like I said, I encourage everyone to try out AI, if not in your medical life, certainly to try it out in your just normal life, because it's an incredible field that's going to be, I think, extremely far-reaching into all aspects of our lives in the next couple of years. Now that is it for us this month. Don't forget to check out the magazine. There's lots there. A couple of my favorite articles this month are Dr. Granovsky with a great reimbursement update for 2025, Pete's Submersion Injuries with Dr. Sorrentino, which is a great review on a topic that is terrifying and something that we don't see very often, and friend of ASAP Now, Dr. Westifer, is back with corneal abrasions. I also really love Dr. Terry's column on ER doctors and leadership, and I found it so inspiring that she interviewed CVS Health's Vice President and Chief Health Equity Officer, Dr. Cal Dunn, for ideas of what else is going on in healthcare and leadership. Now, if you have an idea, as always, we wanna keep you engaged and keeping you having content that you wanna hear and read. So tweet us if you have an idea at ASAP Now, or you're welcome to tweet me personally at Amy Faith Ho. I'll see you all next month for another podcast.